You're listening to the Speech Uncensored podcast. Join us for weekly discussions diving into all the particulars of communication, voice, swallow, and cognition with tangible applications to the world of medical speech and language pathology. Additional resources and the discussion guide for today's episode are in specially curated show notes on speechuncensored.com. And our topic today is leadership. I'm excited to have Ashley Lopez join me to share her insights into making the transition from clinician to leader and leading while being a clinician as well, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I'm excited to explore this topic with Ashley and dive into the tools she's prepared for us. My name is Leanne Porter. I'm your host. And now let's welcome Ashley. Hey, Ashley, how's it going?
Hey, Leanne. Thanks so much for having me. It is an honor and a privilege to be able to talk to you today. I'm here to talk about leadership and how we can all be leaders, starting as clinicians and moving to effective leadership positions and management positions. I think our career and our field really is in need of this passion and this pathway. There's so many other medical professionals that have leadership embedded into their schooling as well as their career trajectory. Physicians, nurses, and even veterinarians have leadership built in. And I think that as speech language pathologists, we need to follow suit and be able to lead ourselves effectively so we can make bigger and better improvements within our jobs and our departments and our entities, as well as our community. And that way we can also work well and work efficiently with other medical professionals as well.
Hook, line, and sinker, I am on board. That sounds wonderful to me, actually. Like, I'm here for this, like 110%. So good.
Well, yeah. So it's truly is one of my passions. I think that you can accomplish many great things as a speech language pathologist in your own right. But if you don't have that ability to impact your surroundings and the people around you using leadership, a lot of those accomplishments will fall to just being unnoticed and unutilized or underutilized for that matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, well, great. So before we dive into learning more about the tools and the information that you've prepared for us today, I want to learn more about you. So where are you? What do you do? And how do you do it?
I am in Houston, Texas. I work for the Houston Methodist System. I currently work in their long-term acute care hospital. I come from about a decade of acute care experience, mainly working in Trauma One hospitals. And I kind of found my home and my love in LTAC, mainly because of the ability to have the acuity and medical complexity that acute care has. But I do have the time and ability to develop a plan of care, diagnose different things, and work towards a true and effective disposition plan, like you do in inpatient rehab or even post-acute inpatient rehab. Being in Trauma One hospitals, I've also worked in TBI rehab facilities, so I do love working with the neuro population, but recently have transitioned my focus into dysphagia practice and all of the complexities that encompasses. I am a board-certified specialist in swallowing and swallowing disorders. I have had formal and informal training in leadership. I am a graduate of ASHA's Leadership Development Program, and I've also been able and have privileged to have leadership training within my state association as well as in my place of work. So I've had that opportunities, and I'm happy to explore those ways that I was able to find those opportunities as we continue our conversation today.
Excellent. Yeah. I wonder if enough people realize the tools that ASHA has for us to get involved in leadership, to learn more about it and the tools. So I'm excited that you've participated in them and that you're going to be able to tell us a little bit more about those and other tools out there as well. So that's cool.
Yeah, great. I'm happy to talk. I am all yours and happy to get started if you're ready to go, Leanne.
Yeah, let's dive in.
Okay. So with leadership and kind of my experience and my pathway, I think it goes without saying that there's many pathways to leadership and there's many different ways to get to your long-term goals. I think that there are ways in which every stage of our career, whether we're CFs starting out or we're tenured senior therapists, kind of working in that management administration area, we can use leadership, we can always improve our leadership, and we can provide that leadership training to others. So I'm going to talk to you about kind of three different topics. The first topic is developing influence without authority. It's like, well, what does that even mean, Ashley? So it means the beginning clinician, where you come out of school, you're ready to run out the gates, and you have so many great, amazing ideas, and you just want to be acknowledged. You want to be heard, and you want to make a difference. And a lot of times, at least from my feedback, and especially my personal experience, we're not always welcome with open arms, you know, with our enthusiasm. And it does take time to read the room, learn the audience, and kind of insert our influence in the situation. So it goes without saying that anyone can nurture and leverage leadership in any workplace and in any timeline in your career. There's significant opportunities in front of everyone. It's just most of the time we haven't really realized that they're there in front of us. A part of it is just saying yes. And I think there may be some grumbles and say, well, I can't always be that yes person. I need to have that work-life balance. I need to be able to say no when I'm juggling too much. And I couldn't agree more. Yes, you have to be able to draw the line in your job and your life and not take on too many responsibilities. However, if we don't approach every opportunity with at least some consideration, there is a multitude of repercussions that we could possibly have missed, right? So there's the proverbial like snowball. We don't say no to one thing, we've lost one opportunity and another opportunity. Where in the reverse, if we say yes, the snowball turns in a different direction and we get all of these different opportunities and more doors are opened and we continue to flourish that way. And that kind of sounds a little bit abstract, but to make it more concrete for you all, is just saying in a meeting, if somebody says, we need somebody to file the documentation from 2017 to 2020, do we have any volunteers? Of course, nobody wants to do that. But why not be the one that says yes? And yes, it's a mundane job. Yes, it absolutely does nothing for us clinically in our clinical skills. But it does give us insight into a particular inner working of our department or our facility. So what I say is, if you've been given a job or if you volunteered for a job, make sure you do that job well. Make sure that you have alphabetized, numerized, and categorized those files so well that when your manager or your leader sees them, they're going to be impressed with your work, and they're going to be able to find that trust in you to be able to give you more opportunities and more responsibilities. We have to be willing to say yes, and we have to be willing to do our job and be accountable for those jobs, because that's how we start to slowly insert our influence. If our management sees that we are willing to be a part of the team, if we're willing to take on those extra things, those are when those opportunities start to open up for us that we may not have had otherwise. And by all means, I don't also think that you should be the favorite. That's not what leadership is about. It's about taking that initiative. So taking those opportunities, saying yes, as well as asking your management or your leadership for feedback. Make your aspirations known. Tell them, you know, I have a 5-year plan and these are what I'm going to do. Because you can't fault your manager for not knowing what they don't know. If they don't know that your desire is to move up the ladder or to gain more clinical experience in XYZ, you can't have negative feelings towards them because they don't know. You have to be able to speak for yourself, take that opportunity, and those things will start to gravitate towards you. So stay consistent with your effort and the gears of change will start moving, which kind of leads me into the next segue of leading yourself to new opportunities. And that is really, this part of leadership is more about those SLPs that are in the middle of their career, trying to figure out, what should I do? What do I want to do? I've had some experience. I found out maybe that's not something that I like, or maybe that's not what I thought it would be. And so you got to have to rethink and internalize where you want to go from here. And I will be honest with you, I think I was probably in this leading myself to new opportunities probably about 3 to 4 years ago, where I really just felt like I was not going anywhere, not really making the progress that I wanted to do professionally and also with my patients. And so that's when I really started looking into leadership and where do I go and how do I make this work. And so I applied for the ASHA Leadership Development Program, and I will say I probably applied to it more than 3 or 4 times. And I finally got in. I was so excited. I took that opportunity and I went through the courses. I went through the year of the leadership training, and it didn't really click. And I still felt lost. But I met really great friends. I networked, and that's when it all came through. When I started talking to other SLPs who were in my position or had gone through this leadership training and how they were utilizing it, how they were implementing what they learned. And so that really sparked my interest, and I wanted to go, well, where do I go from here? Like, I caught the bug. Now I want to keep going. And so I took some initiatives from what I learned in the LDP program, and as well as how to develop my influence. And I spoke to my manager and I said, I want to do this. I want to know if there's any opportunities that I can have in my current job to be able to learn more. And my boss was very receptive and said, well, you do know that Methodist has leadership training for all levels of our careers. And he said, well, let me sign you up. And I did it. It was great. Found more people to network with. I've taken 2 leadership training courses or modules through Houston Methodist. So it's helped me really, really progress in my ability to interact not only with my counterparts in physical and occupational therapy, but it's really helped me in being able to interact with physicians and administration, which I never in a million years would have thought that I would be doing. But being able to lead myself and kind of find that confidence in myself that I can do this, there's a will and a way. I've been able to initiate new service lines, applied for a grant, waiting back on that, really excited. I've been able to take on more responsibilities within my department to further foster my leadership abilities. And not to mention, I have really taken into the advice of my mentors and my role models, and I enrolled in an MBA program. Never in my life would I ever think or have ever thought that I would be taking an accounting class and a finance class and a, you know, change management class. They're completely out of my comfort zone, but they have pushed me to think in different ways, not only clinically, but analytically. And I'm halfway done. So almost kind of see the light at the end of the tunnel, but it's just that ability to self-start and have that confidence in yourself, seek out those opportunities. And so my advice would be to just take some time, do some self-reflection on what's going to make you happy in your career. Because I think what happens most is that we've experienced burnout in our career generally because we feel unaccomplished for what our degree has given us. I'm going to just go ahead and say that in the medical field, it has a very patriarchal setup, right? And so we feel, as a woman-dominated field, we feel like we don't have a place at the table, and we should, and we do. We have to be able to take accountability, to take a seat, and to contribute to whatever conversation or project is happening at the table. What I would say is conduct a SWOT analysis, right? Figure out what your strengths are and what your weaknesses are, and then go ahead and think about the opportunities that you have or would like to have. And then the most important part is think about those threats that inhibit you from doing that, including self-sabotage or those feelings of imposter syndrome of, that's not me, I'm not ready for that, you know, it's so-and-so is better at that than me. And that's not true. That is what you're telling yourself, but that's not true. And you need to be able to find a network of people who support you and who will foster those initiatives for you to keep growing. And to kind of tie it all back is, well, we want to get better and we want to keep growing, not for personal gain, but we want to be able to give back to the community. We became, you know, therapists to help people in whatever area that they need help in at whatever time in their life. And if we can't have enough confidence in ourselves to make a change in where we work, how do we have the confidence in ourselves to make a change in that person's life? A meaningful change, right? Getting them from point A to point B. So just think about those threats that you have inside your mind. And if you need to find someone who will be your cheerleader, or if you need to have, you know, some internalization about where you want to go from here, believe me, I will tell you that, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, I was in a very dark place. And it took some big jumps to get me out of those and to be able to overcome all of those barriers that I was seeing or internalizing and move on from that. And I think self-leadership is where that came from. And lastly, you know, to tie it all in is when I finally got that confidence to lead, when I finally said, these are the steps that I need to take from the courses that I had been able to take or from the trainings that I've taken as well. It really gave me a how-to to get to where I'm at. And I feel like I'm on the precipice of something greater. I feel like there are great things in for our field, but we just don't give ourselves the benefit of it. And that's my interpretation. And if I have instilled some uncomfortable feelings in people, I apologize. That is not my intention. But I think we just really need to learn that exceptional self-leadership helps not only ourselves, but our patients and our profession along. We got to keep moving. Mm-hmm. And we got to keep up with the Joneses, so to speak. We got to keep up with the physicians and the veterinarians out there that are learning way more than we are at a faster rate of speed. We got to be able to sit at the table and flex our leadership muscle just as much as they do.
Yeah. So I wanted to dig a little deeper into the points that you were making about networking. I thought it was really interesting that, you know, you went to like, you know, very structured, organized, like leadership course environment that spanned a year. And for you, like, it wasn't clicking, but it was the networking, the people that you met there that kind of helped you address some things or maybe like increase confidence. Do you feel like maybe a part of leadership is like, because you also mentioned, you know, not listening to the imposter syndrome or the comparison struggling, you know, do you think that there's an element of confidence that makes a leader? And, you know, we could go down that path, like confidence can have like too much is arrogance, not enough is what probably some of us deal with from a day to day. What are your thoughts?
That's a really good question, Leanne. So I would say that, you know, it takes a village, right? And the same thing with our, even we can equate it to even our graduate schooling or our undergraduate schooling. You learn all of these things, but you don't really connect the dots until you get out into the field mm-hmm. and you have your externships and you're like, oh, well, that makes sense. Like you have these epiphanies left and right and you continue to bridge those gaps. And so it probably was the same thing that happened to me. I was learning all these new terms. I was learning all these new pathways and, I guess, so to speak, standards. And it was just kind of a foreign thing to me because all I knew was clinical, right? That was my job. That's what I learned. And this was taking me out of my comfort zone. But when I started talking to my teammates, when I started talking to the people in my cohort, as well as even the alumni from the LDP, it started to make sense because they were giving me practical applications. They were giving me hypothetical situations that I could relate to. It was like, well, this is happening in our hospital. These are the roadblocks we're experiencing. And this is how we worked through it, this conflict resolution back and forth. Not to mention, you know, you find those, find camaraderie in your team members in the LDP. I have a really, really great confidant I got from the LDP. And she's been one of my biggest like cheerleaders and inspiration for me to just to keep moving and keep going. I think you, like I said before, it takes a village to lift somebody up in this case. And those networking opportunities have provided different opportunities for me across the nation and as well as even in our field and even in my current job, which is crazy. And I started thinking that the world is much smaller than I once thought it was. And that's okay. And that's a good thing because We all have, what, 6 degrees of separation. Mm-hmm. But being able to interact and connect with somebody, not only clinically, but maybe on a leadership avenue or on a management level, it gives you a better and deeper relationship with that person. And a lot of times I've heard in the past about concentric circles, right? You meet somebody in circle A, but somehow 5 years down the road, you find them in circle X. And because they're all intertwined, and the more times that you can overlap with somebody and have different interactions with them or different commonalities with them, the stronger that relationship becomes and the more fulfilling that relationship becomes, whether it be through opportunities or through friendship or through career advancement. So think about networking as a bunch of concentric circles, and the more that you can overlap them, the better it is for you and your leadership potential, because you're meeting people with not only common aspects or attributes, but they also have overlapping circles with somebody else that maybe you want to get in contact with, or maybe would be helpful if you were in contact with them so that you could bounce ideas off of them, get advice, run a project, proposal by. Those are the things that help push you forward. And for example, like right now, I'm trying to work on another service line in my department. And through a series of networking people, I found, you know, the queen bee of this service line. And I could not have ever thought in a million years that I would have a Zoom call with the like end all be all person of this particular like therapy discipline. And I was like in awe. And I was like, wow, this would never have happened if I hadn't said yes. And I hadn't said, I will do that and I will commit my time and myself to be doing this and to get better at it. And so I'm very hopeful that we will have this service line within the next 6 to 12 months. And I'm getting the information from the source. And when it comes to accreditation of programs and maybe even JCO auditing, when they say, how do you know that you are proficient, or how do you know that you are competent in this service level? I mean, it doesn't get any better when you say, well, the person who did all of their research and dedicated their entire life mm-hmm. to work to this taught me. I mean, what do you say to that? I mean, you check. You've passed the audit, or you've passed the survey. And so all of those things, I will say, I have to give a lot of credit to my manager that I have now. He has given me every opportunity that I've ever asked for. And it's not because I simply asked, it's because I have developed a relationship in terms of being responsible, being accountable, following through, and making these pie in the sky ideas that I have work and demonstrate benefit not only for the hospital and for the patients and for, you know, the department as a whole. Right. But it took some time to realize that it's not just about patient care. Everybody in the room has to benefit. And if you can identify those ways, it works, and it works very well. But I guess I should say, to come back, is that, you know, I left a job to come to this job 3 to 4 years ago and decided to just start over again. And I did. And that was that self-leadership. And I don't think I would be where I am today. I don't think I'd be a senior level clinician. I don't think I'd be board certified. I don't think I'd be where I am in my career without that jump. And it took a lot of soul searching to do that, but I feel like I'm confident in it. And I think anybody can do it. I feel like they just need to have the right tribe around them and the right resources around them. And ASHA has a leadership development program. I know a lot of state organizations have leadership programs. You can always look at your current job if they have any leadership training. There's online leadership trainings. Universities have leadership training certificates. You don't have to spend a ton of money to have leadership training. There are free avenues all over. You just have to invest the time and the effort in doing that. And you will see the benefit of all of your hard work. Just always remember that you have to be a team player when you're leading as well. Contribute to the department and their objectives. and just take a mindful approach of being a team member that works effectively and collaborates with others for a greater cause other than self-fulfillment. Because leadership, that's not what leadership is about. It's not about, look at how wonderful I am. Look at all of the amazing things that I did. It's not about that. It's look at all the amazing things that I did with my department or for my patients or for my community. And that should be where leadership is, at least in my head, mm-hmm. right? We should all be servant leaders as clinicians, right? Like we want to help others and we want to make holistic change, and that's where leadership comes into place. I wouldn't be where I am without all of the people who supported me or gave me the opportunities, and I will never deny that I needed help. Leadership is humbling as well as enriching. You just have to allow yourself to step out of the box and be vulnerable for a little bit. That's the key. And I will say that in this, I think in my twilight of our career, you have to be able to be practicing at your highest level in order to move to the next step of leadership, which is leading others in the right direction. I still consider myself as just leading myself. I don't think that I'm a leader that is leading others. Although I aspire to do that, I don't think that I'm in that spot in my career, and I think that's okay. I want to be able to be practicing at the highest level of my current level because I want to be able to be giving back to the people who come after me and give that generation the right information and speak from experience, not from this is what I read in a book mm-hmm. and or this is how it should always be and this is how it will always be. I think that we should, especially when we're trying to climb the leadership ladder, we need to be mindful of clinically practicing and operating at the highest level that we are in currently and not try to keep pushing towards the finish line. If we're not ready, that's okay. You've got to have that emotional intelligence about yourself to step back and keep learning. And I think I'm still in that learning phase. Mm-hmm.
Girl, I know I am. Constantly learning over here.
Constantly. Yeah. It's a fun thing. And I feel like my blood pressure is coming up a little bit because I'm getting excited. But I want to talk about a part of leadership that we will all eventually get to. I can't say I'm speaking from experience, but I want to be able to provide this information to clinicians who have been in the field for over 2 decades, who have found themselves in management positions without really any education, or maybe they stumbled upon it. You know, they were in the right place at the right time. And maybe they're not 20 years decorated as a clinician. Maybe they're 5 years or 2 years, and their environment called for them to take a stand and step up. Mm-hmm. So really isn't about age or years of experience. It could just be what has occurred in your career. So I will start off by saying one of the biggest misunderstandings in leadership is that it's synonymous with management. It can be. You can have great leaders who are not managers, and you can have managers who are not great leaders. So that's why it's really important to think about leadership when it comes to being in those positions that warrant more responsibility or authority. Because I think this part of leadership is the bridge to future generations and how we operate as a profession. So systems, health systems, rehab systems, clinics, things of that, they all operate on a certain trajectory. And by design, they kind of mitigate improvement. They kind of stifle that innovation because they want to work in a continuous timeline. And I think people who are truly in those directing roles need to create a system or maybe even an operating procedure that allows people to reach out of the box and take responsibility for other activities. So fostering that, taking responsibility when others don't have the authority to. So giving those people the spotlight. What that means is we need innovative thinkers. And if you are in a leadership or authoritative position, you need to be able to foster and sponsor those innovative thinkers and give them the opportunities to learn and experience where you are. So that way they're not starting from scratch when they get to your position. It's kind of that mutual mentorship relationship, and where, you know, the tenured, seasoned, you know, SLP is learning from the bright-eyed and bushy-tailed SLP and vice versa. There's two ends of the spectrum that can be mutually beneficial for both. So kind of trying to reorganize the way that you run meetings, the way that you appoint people to special projects, or even hire new people. I am always one to say that groupthink is a very dangerous thing. And if we are only hiring people from our network, or we're only hiring people who come from X, Y, and Z university, or we're only hiring people that have X, Y, and Z skills, then we are robbing our department or a community of a diverse workforce. Coming from a different university doesn't make you a better or worse clinician. I did not come from a big name university. I actually came from a Hispanic serving university that was very small at the very bottom of Texas. And I never once felt inferior to anybody in terms of my education and what I received in school. Because again, it's what you do with it. You can have the best professors and researchers teaching you, but if you don't do anything with it, or you don't apply it, or maybe stretch that information to use it functionally, it's about as beneficial or useful as the paper that it sits on. So think about, how do you diversify your particular department, whether it be people with different skills that can teach each other, so that way you have cross-training, or different universities, because maybe one university specialized in bilingual intervention and one university specialized in medical speech language pathology and another university specialized in AAC, like programming and things of that sort. And imagine how fruitful your department would be if you have three different trains of thought coming together to make whatever situation or case that comes to your door better and have that optimal patient outcomes. Allowing people to take a seat at the table. I think in meetings, if you're running a meeting, you need to be able to allow everyone time to speak. Whether or not they take that time to speak or offer advice or suggestions, that is their prerogative. But if you're not providing those openings for volunteering or for interaction, then we're not, as a leader, you're not fostering an environment for growth. So think about being a sponsor when you're in this level of leadership and not necessarily a mentor. And when I say sponsor, I mean speaking on behalf of others when they're not in the room, or recommending others for positions or projects because of their abilities, because of their skills, not because of who they are, who they know. Really just empowering those who are best fit for the job. Not only does that give you the moral compass of you're doing the right thing, but it falls on the individual in which you appoint to be able to make good on that or not. You've opened that opportunity for them, and it's their opportunity or their responsibility to take it or not. They can say no. And maybe when you offer that information, that person is trying to develop influence, but they're not ready. Or maybe giving somebody an opportunity to take a position will enlighten them to start leading themselves. So when you are in the upper echelons of leadership, really take that as an honor and a responsibility for not only the people you work with, but for the profession as a whole, because you are the gatekeepers for the next generation of leaders in our profession. And that's a pretty heavy weight on your shoulders. But I think with the right mindset and the realization that diversity in education, diversity in background, diversity in skill sets is a strength. Mm-hmm. and you don't need to have everybody exactly the same in your department.
Yeah. I mean, there's research out there that supports that entirely, that workplaces and workforces that have those diverse perspectives and backgrounds present in the group that's working, I feel like I need to have this on standby because I don't want to like misquote it, but I'm like, it's all positive stuff. It's like they're better problem solvers. They get better work done. Like there's just so many more positives to having that on your workforce than, you know, if everybody went to the same school or came from the same background, like that's a very limited viewpoint and perspective, and so much will be missed. You know.
Exactly. And so changing the culture, I guess, right? Changing the culture of your department or your team and being able to foster and accept everybody how they arrive to your team not only leads to, you know, successful outcomes for your department, but it also leads to employee satisfaction, improved retention, and then employees who feel happy, people who feel like a member of the team. They produce more because they want to. Mm-hmm. They produce more because it makes them happy. Mm-hmm. And it's not a task. It's not the job. It's what they love to do. Mm-hmm. And if, as a leader, you're able to do that, if you're able to make a job that at times can be mundane or stressful or chaotic, and if you can turn that into a place where it literally can be a natural disaster outside, but you're at the hospital working your undetermined amount shift because you have to work and there's patients no matter if the sky is falling or it's frozen over or anything like that. If you can be able to foster an environment that's still productive and happy and fruitful, and people, colleagues can have stimulating and intellectual conversations and have respectable differences of opinions, that is the dream. That is what I wish I can have one day. I'm not that I don't have it now, but I'm definitely not responsible for that. I won't take credit on that, but being able to really have a stimulating conversation or difference of opinions on a case helps you treat a patient better. Mm-hmm. Because you're not looking at a patient with blinders or bias. You're seeing it from two different viewpoints, and maybe you miss one thing, but your partner sees another thing and you've had that aha moment. And maybe you don't. Maybe it's not always great, but having somebody to bounce off ideas and fostering that where, you know, your colleagues want to come to you and ask you questions, and you feel, and they feel just as confident answering questions if you come to them. There's that mutual respect. I think a lot of times, I don't know why, but in our profession, those who are in leadership are often seen as, for lack of better words, I can't think of it right now, but it's just untouchable. They don't seem approachable, mm-hmm. right? Like it's like, oh, don't ask them because they know too much and they'll just make you feel bad, right? Or they'll serve your pride on a platter and then that's it, right? Like don't ever talk to that person. Mm-hmm. They know too much and they're too powerful and I'm not. And leadership is not about power. It is not about being a dictator. And it's not about accepting all the great things at the top. It's truly about being a team player and making sure that the team all feels the same, right? Mm-hmm. That emotional intelligence of, oh goodness, like, this is not working. I need to have this difficult conversation with this person, or I need to have this difficult conversation with the group. And being composed in those difficult issues as well. A lot of times when we are in a difficult situation, we tend to get a really high-pitched voice and we're just very like, you know, and clam up and we just have all of those nonverbal signs of this is not, I don't like having this conversation. And if you as a leader are depicting that, why would anybody in the group want to express themselves or feel like they are in an environment to express themselves? So keeping that composure and watching how we speak, right? Like the way we say things and the mannerisms in which we deliver them has to really jive with the situation. If we always seem hurried or disinterested or disconnected with our team, then our team won't come to us when it really counts. And that's when the culture will fall and we will have those issues where people don't feel satisfied. They feel burnt out. They feel like they need to move on. And there can be hurt feelings and grudges and things of that sort. And maybe it's not one person's fault. Maybe the team kind of let the ball drop. But as a leader, you need to be able to rally the troops and keep them on the same page. It's very hard to talk about leadership when you don't really have a concrete example. So I hope that the listeners are identifying with this and maybe can relate it a little bit. I apologize if it's a little bit abstract, but overall, I hope that you find inspiration and kind of confidence to pick up a book, Google an article, find a mentor, or talk to your management and say, hey, I want to fill out a career plan. You know, tell me where I can go from here or what tools that I need. I'm still learning about leadership. I think I will always learn about leadership because it takes you places. I love my career and I want to be able to flourish in my career far more than I ever thought I could. And I think I'm getting there, but I would not have done it if I didn't think that there was an actual topic on it. Leadership was so far off for me. It's like, well, not as a speech therapist. There's no leadership in speech therapy. That's totally for like governors and presidents and all that. And it's not. It's in every career. Even if you're a speech language pathologist who maybe wants to consider a different career, and that is completely okay. That's what works best for you. But leadership will help you get there. And so take the time to take a deep dive into leadership. Apply to ASHA LDP or apply to your state organizations, or maybe even light a fire under your state organization to create one. Mm-hmm. You know, the possibilities are really endless. In the slide deck that I provided for this, there are some places where you can look for to find leadership information. My experience and my kind of theories about leadership are not the only ones out there. There are many, 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 and you can find one that you truly identify with and can connect with.
Yeah.
I think the best thing is to take it a chance.
Yeah, I agree. And I really like in your slideshow that you provided that will be in the show notes, that there's like a self-reflection exercise you have in there with some questions to think about success in your current role, in your current role over time, and for future roles. Like, so you're thinking about the now and the coming and then in the future. And when you spend that time reflecting on that and getting a better grasp of what that looks like, then I feel like you're better able to go to that manager or director and let them know in specific terms how you see that panning out. So yeah, I really like an opportunity for some reflection. That's good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the recipe, right? You just take that and reflect, apply it, and ask the director.
All right, Ashley, is there anything else you wanted to touch on before we wrap up?
Well, I think that one of the takeaways is just, again, finding the confidence to take that initiative in whatever step or area of the career that you're in. Leadership isn't easy. And it's just really a test of our discipline and our vulnerability and our willingness to accept our evolution as we progress as clinicians. Being a leader puts yourself in our profession on a successful path filled with new insights and dedication. We are a profession dedicated to helping others. So I think we need to help ourselves help them.
Mm-hmm. I think our discipline is in a great place to benefit from, you know, leaders within our profession rising up to help guide us into, you know, what the next segment of speech language pathology will look like. So it's really exciting to see how we have adapted over time to meet the different needs, like in a hospital setting, you know, because for a long period of time, we didn't touch swallowing. That was not us. And now it's like a vast majority of what we do in the hospital setting. So, you know, I'm not necessarily looking for us to take on anything new, in our scope of practice.
but like with new successful like patient outcomes from like catastrophic injuries, like you never know what, 20 years from now where it's like, well, we now have like bionic tracheas. Like, like what? Like, where are we going from here? Like, what is our field going to evolve into? We don't know. And the medical field is going to dictate where we go with their innovation. And if we aren't innovative ourselves, we will be left behind, or we will be put in a corner, and they will tell us what we do and what we don't do. And we need to take that time now to become leaders. So that way, when those innovations in the medical field do happen, we are ready. And we are starting those service lines, and we're starting those programs to keep up with those breakthroughs in medicine.
I love it. Love it. I agree. That's so true. So good. Okay. Well, is that everything for us, Ashley?
Yeah, I think so. Leanne, again, I can't thank you enough for giving me this opportunity to talk about and ramble about leadership. I hope that I'm able to at least touch one person in the audience and give them the confidence to take a leap.
Excellent. Well, Ashley, I'm so glad you were able to join me on the podcast and share the tools for developing influence without authority and reframing how I think about leadership. I really like those tools that you've shared. I just wanted to highlight another one of your takeaways is that leadership is essential to amplify the profession and magnify the impact in the community that we serve. And I'm on board with that. I really agree that it's time that we start thinking about leadership in these new ways, that it's not something separate or apart from being an SLP, that you're either a leader or you're an SLP, like you are an SLP leader. I think that's important for us to start there and grow from there too.
Yeah. So I want to hear people say like, I'm a medical SLP. But I want to hear people say like, I'm a leading SLP. Like, that's my jam. Or like, I'm a school-based SLP. I'm a private practice SLP. That should be like a label in our career.
All right. So for our listeners, be sure to access the discussion guide and Ashley's slides in the show notes on Speech Uncensored so that you can take the opportunity to apply some of these tools that Ashley's talked about in your practice and see how it goes. And in closing, I want to encourage you to write a thoughtful review on Apple Podcasts about the things that you've learned on the Speech Uncensored podcast so that other SLPs can find the podcast and join us on this journey. And I hope the material that we've covered today has nourished your mind so that your practice can flourish. Now I want you to go out there and be awesome.